The complaint we filed today alleges that Texas has violated Section 2 by creating redistricting plans that deny or abridge the rights of Latino and Black voters to vote on account of their race, color, or membership in a language minority group.
On Monday, the U.S. Department of Justice filed a lawsuit against Texas as a result of the redistricting in the state. Over the past 10 years, the population in Texas has grown significantly, and much of that population growth is coming from Latinx, Black, and Asian American communities. The DOJ claims, however, that the new districting maps do not represent that growth, and in fact strip people of color in Texas from fair electoral representation. Joining me now is Michael Lee, Senior Counsel for the Brennan Center's Democracy Program. Welcome to The Takeaway, Michael.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So talk to me a bit. What are the legal challenges actually outlined in this suit?
Well, there are a couple of challenges in the Justice Department suit. The first is the allegation that Texas's plans were intentionally discriminatory toward Black and Latino voters who powered Texas's growth along with Asian voters last decade. 95% of Texas's population growth last decade was non-white. And yet, when it came time to draw the new maps, Texas created no new opportunities for minority communities. In fact, went backwards, dismantling several very diverse multiracial districts in the suburbs of Dallas and Houston, and failing to create Latino opportunity districts in Houston and Dallas. And that's a second allegation that's in the complaint, which is the maps did not comply with the Voting Rights Act by failing to create enough opportunities. So basically, the allegation is that the maps were both discriminatory in intent and effect.
For those who have followed the redistricting story since Shelby v. Holder, obviously there's a time when a map like this would have had to undergo a Department of Justice pre-authorization review, right? But I guess part of what I'm wondering is, are these portions of Texas that have been redistricted in this way, are they part of what would have previously been covered under that sort of automatic requirement for DOJ review?
Absolutely. You know, Texas, prior to 2013, prior to the Supreme Court Shelby County versus Holder ruling, like other states that had a history of discrimination, was required to get all election law changes, including redistricting plans, pre-approved by the federal government, either by the Justice Department or by a three-judge panel in Washington. And until Texas proved that its maps were not discriminatory, either in intent or effect, it couldn't put them into effect. And that was a really powerful tool. And it was a little bit like having a cop on the block. So maps sometimes weren't that aggressively drawn. But because the Supreme Court struck down the formula for determining what states were covered in 2013, and because Congress has not yet enacted a new formula for determining what states should be covered, that doesn't apply this cycle. And so what you saw this cycle is like really aggressive map drawing that sort of surgically targets communities of color, who again were 95% of Texas's population growth last decade, and really undermines and dilutes their power really for the whole of the decade if these maps stand.
So Michael, say a bit more about where these population changes have happened over the course of the past decade. Are they in places that people might find surprising, or are they in the kind of stronghold spaces like Houston and these other sort of metro areas?
Well, Texas was the fastest growing state last decade, added 4 million people. And really, the growth is in the urban and especially suburban areas. And, you know, it's the suburban areas that in particular, I think people might find surprising, because it's the suburbs that are getting much more diverse. So take Fort Bend County, for example, outside of Houston, where Tom DeLay, many people will remember Tom DeLay, Republican leader back in the day. But, you know, he was from Fort Bend County back in when he represented Fort Bend County. It was 90% white. It's only 30% white now. And it's very diverse. It's a mix of Asians, Latinos, Blacks, whites. It really is a hodgepodge of everything. And it's in these really very diverse suburbs that a lot of the most aggressive line drawing was done, because I think, you know, those suburban districts have become a lot more competitive for Democrats as multiracial coalitions have come together. and Republicans have decided that they're not going to compete for the votes of Black voters and Latino voters and Asian voters. Instead, they're going to try to gerrymander their way out of a problem. And that's, you know, I think where, you know, a lot of the battles are, but also in the urban areas where, you know, from in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, for example, Latinos, there are more Latinos in the Dallas-Fort Worth area than there are in the entire state of Colorado. And yet there is no Latino majority district in the area. And all of that, I think, is at the heart of these challenges.
You know, you've said two things here I want to dig into. So first, help people understand what aggressive line drawing means.
Well, there are several examples of it. One, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's a congressional district that's about 48% Latino, so almost Latino majority. And what Republicans do is they take a large block of Latinos in suburban Dallas and draw them out of the district and put them instead in a mostly rural district south of Dallas that is a white majority district. So these suburban Latinos outside of Dallas are now in a rural white district. So that's one example. But another example is in Fort Bend County. Fort Bend County has historically been in one congressional district, but what they do, because it's become increasingly competitive, because it's a district where people of color are on the verge of electing a candidate of choice, what they do is they saw apart minority communities in Fort Bend County and put some of them in a district in Houston and leave some of them in the district and fill them in on the backside with rural white voters. And so really what you're seeing is this you know, sort of the creation of these suburban rural districts in order to shore up Republican power and also to lock communities of color out of power.
So the second thing you said that I want to dig into just a bit is the decision not to compete for these votes. I mean, particularly in a state like Texas, demographics don't have to be partisan destiny. You know, again, if we look back even as recently as the presidency of George W. Bush, there was an aggressive effort to bring particularly the Latino voters into the kind of GOP big tent. Why the decision to fold that tent up and not compete for these new demographics that are swiftly growing in the state?
Well, it's a little bit inexplicable, and it may not be very smart in the long run because, you know, it's not as though Texas is going to stop getting more diverse. In fact, it's only going to get more diverse over the course of this decade. And, you know, many of these districts, if you left them in place or, you know, and made modest changes to make sure that they were equally populated, they would be really competitive districts. And in a rational world, Republicans would say, you know, we should go out and find our Latino candidate or an Asian candidate to run. We should go out and try to compete for at least some votes from Latinos and Asians and Black voters. And, you know, like, we don't need very many because these districts are competitive. We don't need very many to win. And we can sort of build, you know, compete for the multiracial Texas of the future. And instead, what they're trying to do is they're trying to gerrymander their way out and kick the can down the road. But in doing so, they may ultimately be riding their party into oblivion because, you know, they are drawing these districts that will elect people who are not very representative of Texas and, you know, increasingly will be not very appealing to the, you know, diverse multiracial Texas that is, you know, at the right here and now.
Michael, just one last question that'll probably not be in the live broadcast, but will end up in the podcast version. Or who knows what'll end up. We'll make decisions. but one last question, and that is, any chance the DOJ will actually win this?
Well, you know, the Department of Justice, it's really great that the Department of Justice is in this case and in this case early because they bring a lot of resources to the table. And, you know, there are a number of suits brought by Black voters, Latino voters and others challenging these maps. But, you know, these are expensive, hard cases to bring in. Having DOJ in the case is certainly great. But at the same time, DOJ will face the same headwinds that everybody else is facing, which is, you know, more conservative courts and a legal framework where, you know, that is much more frayed than it was even just a decade ago. And principally, you know, partially by there's no preclearance, but also because the Supreme Court has greenlighted partisan gerrymandering. And now that created an easy out for the state to simply claim that we were discriminating against Democrats who happened to be Black, Latino, and Asian, but, you know, we weren't discriminating against them because of their race. We were discriminating against them because they're Democrats, and that's okay. And that's an out that the Supreme Court has left, and it's a really dangerous out. And it, you know, if courts aren't willing to dig deep, it may succeed.
Michael Lee from the Brennan Center's Democracy Program, thank you for your time today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.